Town. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
And I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Happy Friday, Richard.
I was going to begin by saying something like, I am. In my best Darth Vader voice. I was tempted to do that. No, I'm Dr. Richard Marshall. And it's a silly Friday. What is casual Friday?
Casual.
Casual. You've been casual. You have your PAC Florida shirt on.
I have
today.
My PAC Florida polo on.
I forgot. I could have worn mine today.
Yeah.
And I forgot all about it. But I was going to do my best Darth Vader impression because I thought that would be a good way to introduce today's topic. From what you've told me, you've been very secretive about this one, by the way. Normally, we talk all week long about what we're going to do for our podcast and everything. And very early in the week, you made a very cryptic comment about, I've got my podcast ready. You know, it was like early, like Tuesday.
Yeah.
And you said, I know what I'm going to talk about this week. Normally, it takes a few days. We talk about it. And you said, and I said, well, what is it? I said, well, I can't tell. And you told me you couldn't tell me yet that you were formulating this idea.
Yeah.
And you've been just dribbling little things out all week long.
Yeah.
And so finally this morning, you sort of gave me the hint of what we were going to talk about. It had something to do with Darth Vader.
Well, Darth Vader is included.
He's in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward.
I had so much fun last week with Yoda. Yoda stuff last week.
You can't try, you have to do.
Yeah, try not, do or do not was last week. But this week, it's a quote from a different movie. The title of this week's podcast is, With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility.
Okay.
All right, do you know what movie that's from?
No, probably Star Wars.
a little part of me dies every time you get something like that wrong.
Was that wrong?
Yes. That's from Spider-Man. And so what we're going to talk about today, because I recently, and I know you haven't seen it, but I recently saw the new Captain America movie, Captain America Civil War.
At least
which was
the title.
You did.
I heard it was very good.
Which was a fantastic movie.
Right.
And one of the things that I noticed, didn't just notice in this movie, but a recurring theme in so many movies, so many powerful movies that like reach people in different ways, there's this commonality. And one of those relatively consistent themes is the motivating factor that leads people to either become a hero or a villain. All right? Some of those motivating themes, or one of those primary motivating themes, is loss. And that you mentioned Darth Vader, because I mentioned Darth Vader to you. Darth Vader began his path. I'm going to nerd out just a little bit, but it's okay. You'll see where it's going.
You don't go to conventions.
No. I don't do that. Okay. I know people who do and dress
Some
up and
Some of my best friends do.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Dr. Amy, we're talking about you. I called her out.
Oh, that's a call out.
That is a call out.
Okay.
But when we think about Darth Vader, began his path to the dark side.
Right.
After his mother was killed by killed in Episode One. There's no spoilers, but when his mother was killed by the Sand People, and you could tell at that point. Because he broke his Jedi commitment and went and killed all of the Sand People. And it was sort of a big... a lot of people didn't necessarily like that particular episode, but one of the things that he said in that was so very powerful because he was talking about how he killed all of the Sand People, women, children, mm-hmm. and the men mm-hmm. as well. And so that we could see that's where he began shifting towards, really strongly towards the dark side. And then, of course, his final shift happened after he believed that Padme, who was his wife, after he believed that she died.
Uh-huh.
After she did die.
So occurrences of loss caused him to become bitter and to move inexorably to the dark side.
Right.
Okay.
And Darth Vader, I think, is a great example of this, but we see this repeated over and over and over again in these mythic types of tales. Mm-hmm. And I using myth as right. very broadly speaking, because right. when we look at most of our heroes, most of our superheroes, most of our supervillains, all of them or many of them have this similar thing. We learn in we know that Tony Stark's parents were killed.
Tony Stark's
Iron Man. Sorry.
Tony Stark's is who?
Tony Stark is Iron Man. It's okay. I'm telling you, folks, it's hard sometimes. My job is really hard sometimes. Spider-Man.
I know Iron Man, but I didn't know it was Tony Stark.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, I know.
His parents
Tobey
were
Maguire.
Killed. That was like 15 years ago.
Okay.
There's been two other Spider-Men since then. But Spider-Man, Batman, his parents were killed. Superman, not only his parents,
that's right.
but his entire planet.
In Batman, that's that famous scene when they were on the New York street.
That's like, and yeah, that was absolutely. That's the iconic image of what created Batman was him witnessing his parents be killed.
Right.
But Superman, Black Panther, you know, all of these heroes, their origins, their origin story includes some significant loss. And to some extent, to pull back to Star Wars, Luke Skywalker. Luke Skywalker began his path, if we remember back to the original Star Wars movie, you know, Luke, of right. course, never knew his parents when he was growing up. But the father-like figure that he had in that movie was Obi-Wan Kenobi. And if we remember when Obi-Wan
right.
Kenobi is fighting Darth mm-hmm. Vader, he says, strike me down now and I'll become more powerful than you could ever imagine.
Right.
Luke Skywalker witnessed Obi-Wan Kenobi be killed by Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And that began Luke on that path to destroy the Empire. So we have those heroes, but we also have villains. You're not going to know this name, I know. Ivan Vanko, he was one of the villains
You're
in
right.
Iron Man, and he believed that Tony Stark and Stark Enterprises killed his father, and so he mm-hmm. became this super villain. I already mentioned Darth Vader. Boba Fett, you know, he was mm-hmm. against the Jedi because he believed that, because he saw them kill his father. Loki, from the Thor movies. Loki hated Thor and his family so much because he believed that they killed his family. Magneto from X-Men. So, and the story, and it just goes on that, you know, we have all of this, these repeated themes. We could even go to Disney characters and mm-hmm. The Lion King,
right.
you know, Simba, you know, he had to go back and he had to battle Scar because he found out, you know, Scar took over the pride when he killed his father and all those kinds of things. So we have these traumatic, in all of these stories that we hold as valuable to us, they all have this similar theme of a person experiencing some traumatic event, and then a decision is made. The decision is made as related to how we choose to respond to that traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
Some respond by wanting to do good. Others respond by wanting to get revenge or mm-hmm. to do bad. And that's where I want us to go with this podcast today, is to talk about choice theory.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Now I can see why you didn't have to tell me too much about this, because
this is
leading to choice theory,
yeah.
right? And choice theory is developed by William Glasser, the famous
right.
Psychiatrist. Okay, now
something
I'm
I
with
know
you.
That you know very well.
I
just had to do the build up because I just love movies.
As I sit here listening to you, it was like a foreign language.
Was it? Well, I'm sure that you'll go into some history here in just a few minutes, and
I can't talk.
You'll talk about 1960.
I can't talk what you just did. I have no idea what you were talking about.
But you know what? People that are listening know.
They would know.
Yeah,
Dr.
I think
Amy
so.
Would know.
She would.
She probably followed you completely. She probably knew every reference.
She probably did. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So.
But I agree with your theme. The theme being that loss.
Right.
Particularly of parents, because there's no event quite like losing a parent.
Right.
You know,
right.
some friends
the,
of
the only thing that I, one could imagine being worse than losing a parent would be losing a child.
Absolutely.
But we have decisions to make when we have a loss like that.
When events occur.
Right. Mm-hmm. We can, and you know, recognizing that we will experience bereavement and that right. loss and all of those kinds of things. But we have a decision to make as it relates to how we're going to proceed with our life thereafter.
Right. What we're going to do right. about that.
Okay. Right. My grandfather, we call him Pa. I think you met Pa.
Yeah.
He was...
Most impressive thing I ever saw.
A wonderful
man.
Was
when he gave himself insulin.
he would give himself insulin shots, like, through his t-shirt.
Through his shirt.
I don't...
Never. Through his shirt.
He'd be sitting there eating, and he would pull out the insulin and everything, and just right through his sleeve,
shirt,
and then just
skin,
keep eating.
Everything.
Pa. But he was a wonderful, wonderful man. And... he passed away a number of years ago from Alzheimer's mm-hmm. and some of those kinds of complications. And my son was really close to him. My son really loved him dearly. And I think that part of that, because that happened when my son was younger, part of that, I think, has led my son to wanting to study neurology because mm-hmm. he's very fascinated about what happens in the Alzheimer's brain. And he wants to understand that, and he wants to do something about it. And so he took that loss, and while it was really hurtful, and he is still tearful at times when he thinks about Pa. Mm-hmm. I think that has driven him to have some of those kinds of interests. Others, not necessarily in my family, but others experience loss, and they allow the loss and the trauma to influence them negatively, and they stay withdrawn, and they begin to deteriorate mm-hmm. functionally, mm-hmm. and they just can't do the things that they once did, and they just have such difficulty processing the experience so that they can move on
right.
and experience life in an ongoing way. So we're going to talk about choice theory a little bit today as it relates to how do we cope with these kinds of experiences in our life. Mm-hmm. Does this sound good?
Yeah, now, okay, I'm with you now. I'm ready to go.
All right.
Yeah. So, because you're talking not just about loss, you're talking about any kind of life experience.
Right.
Okay,
right.
And what our response to the events in our life.
Right.
Things happen.
Right.
Okay, we don't always have control. I gave my daughter my car to use this summer.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It needs a repair now. Okay, somebody hit it. So now she sent me a picture.
It's only been 2 weeks.
It was 3 days, and she already had sent me a picture of somebody ran into the car while it was parked somewhere. So that's an event in my life, right?
Right.
And so that's what you're talking
right.
about, is that these things happen. There are some crude kind of bumper stickers, like stuff happens.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But things happen.
Right.
And we don't always have control
right.
over what happens. What you're saying is we do have control over how we react to what happens.
Right.
Okay.
And I think that many parents intuitively tell their kids that. They teach their kids that. Because when you have your child and he says, he hits somebody and he says, well, it wasn't my fault because he hit me first or this happened.
Right.
And we tell our kids, I can't do anything about him.
Right.
But I can only do some, you can only control your behavior. And what we're mm-hmm. telling them in essence is, you can't control things that happen in your life, but you control how you respond to it.
But, and this comes under this, the other heading is you can't change other people.
Right. Right.
Okay. And many of us are struggling to change others.
Right.
And we say to people, you can't change other people. You can only change yourself.
Right.
And that was one of the things that William Glasser, the developer of choice theory, it used to be called reality therapy. Now it's called choice therapy. He renamed it because that's what he was talking about. He said, yeah. You make decisions. You choose how you're going to react.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about what choice theory is. What was William Glasser talking about?
What he said is that what people have to stop doing is, he was a psychiatrist.
Right.
He died about, I think, 3 years ago. He was in his 80s. And he prided himself on never using medication. He was a psychiatrist who had prescription privileges because he was a trained and licensed physician, but he never used medication. He felt that people would get themselves into dilemmas, anxiety, depression, stress, and the way out of that was to make different decisions. And one of the things that he kept repeating was, we cannot change other people. We can only change ourselves. And he said that if you want something to be different, you have to change yourself. You can't try to change other people. He tells a wonderful story. He told a wonderful story at dinner one night. And he had his first wife died early. He was probably in his 50s or 60s when she died. He remarried. Mm-hmm. And he was at breakfast with his second wife. And he could tell that she wanted to say something to him. And she said, well, he finally said, well, you seem to have something on your mind. And she said, yes, it bothers me when you, and I don't know what it was. I think it was bring the paper to the table or something. Mm-hmm. He would read the newspaper at the table. And she said, it really bothers me when you do that because I'd really like to talk to you during breakfast. And could you stop? And he said, well, yeah, I'd be happy to. And she said, well, what do I need to do in return? You know, what do I need to? And he said, he was kind of puzzled, looked at her. He said, you don't have to do anything in return. I care about you. You've made a reason. You've asked me to do something, and I'm more than happy to do it. And I don't expect anything in return.
Right.
And that's one of the stories that he told. And that's how we have to decide if we can comply, if we're willing to do that. Very often we'll talk to people and we'll say to them, well, you have to tell your partner this. They may decide not to change.
Right.
Okay. But then you have to decide what you're going. You can't get angry because right. they're not changing. Oh, you can, of course. But you then have a decision to make. What right. are you going to decide about this person's decision? Mm-hmm. And if you decide that you can live with it, then live with it. But you can't complain about your own decision.
Right.
Whatever your decision is, you have to be able to live with it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what he said, that we are constantly making decisions. And we have to stop trying to make others change, mm-hmm. number one. And we have to stop blaming other people.
Right.
And we have to stop blaming events. Events are going to happen.
Right.
Okay. It's how you respond to the event that's important. That's
right.
what keeps you mentally healthy, is how you respond to events.
Right. And so when we say that we have a choice in those kinds of situations, that mm-hmm. that's what we're talking about, is that we have, we can either look at things in a negative way,
that's right. That's right.
As though, you know, a lot of people sort of bring with these experiences victimization. Mm-hmm. You know, they become the victim. They become the all these things always happen to me. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those kinds of things that people.
But that's a decision you make,
right?
To label yourself
right.
as a victim,
right?
That's not. It's something you decide to accept.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And you know, again, there is a, I think, a natural tendency to feel that way initially after something bad happens.
Right.
Why does this always happen? Mm-hmm. To bring up another well-known psychologist is Aaron Beck. You know, and he talked about those mm-hmm. automatic cognitive distortions that tend
right.
to happen,
mm-hmm.
Especially during times of depression and depressed mood. And so he talked about that, and he said that, you know, we have these automatic thoughts that come up, and most of us are able to recognize those automatic mm-hmm. thoughts, and we process it, and we move on, and we recognize that, okay, well, bad things don't always happen because this good thing did just happen, so... it's not quite as universal as
right.
As it felt. And that was one of the things that he talked about, was that depressed people tend to look at things universally. And so they attribute negative life experiences to everything.
That's right. And I think you make a good point where you say you have this initial response.
Right.
Okay. We all do that.
Right.
Okay. We have an initial reaction. But the initial reaction can't guide our actions.
Right.
Okay, like you talk about Darth Vader. Okay, this tragedy befell him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And his initial reaction was, I'm going to get revenge.
Right.
Okay, that was his initial feeling. But if he would have just stayed calm, that feeling would pass.
Right.
Okay. And then he could think more rationally and say, okay, what should I do about this? What kind of person am I, and how am I going to respond to this?
Right. Mm-hmm. And building on that, and not to, you brought Star Wars up this time, not me. But what I'm going to add to that is...
Well, I'm more of a fan than you are.
What I'm going to add to that is, if we... For those of you who have no idea about Star Wars, this is going to be... you'll see how it fits in. But temperament. We can see in our children from early on, mm-hmm, those who can adapt to these kinds of situations and those who can't.
Yep.
And mm-hmm, when it comes to Anakin Skywalker, who turned into Darth Vader, you could tell from early on that he had that temperament that would make it a little bit difficult for him to adjust to things.
And could you tell?
You could tell when he was younger. I think that, you know, if you want to extrapolate from what, you know, when he... I'm talking very specific movie experiences, but when Anakin was brought to the Jedi Council and the Jedi said, I see fear in you, I see anger in you, mm-hmm, when they talked about those kinds of things, I think we could say that they were talking about his temperament. You know, when he was saying that he, you know, when he was talking about his concern with leaving his mother to do the, mm-hmm, Jedi training and all that kind of stuff, he had these intrinsic characteristics that maybe predicted some difficulty dealing with stress and those kinds of emotions. Uh-huh. I think it's also interesting. This is just a my own interpretation. You know, when he was first taken off of Tatooine and the planet that he grew up on, one of his first statements that he said when he was they were in space, is he talked about how cold it was. And I think that as compared to the way that some other characters had responded to it the first time, I think that all of those were hints to this underlying temperament of his that eventually turned him into the villain that we know of. But how that relates to what we're talking about is with our children. Our children come with a temperament. Our children come with an ability to respond to stressors in their life. Mm-hmm. Some children adjust and conform and are adjustable to various situations in very, mm-hmm, easy, smooth ways. Others aren't. And what we need to do, what we have to do as parents, and so I'm talking about, you know, a parental position, not just when we're dealing with it for our own mm-hmm, our own growth, but from a parental perspective, we have to teach our kids this sometimes. Mm-hmm. We have to teach our kids how to cope with these kinds of experiences.
You're talking about resilience.
We're talking about resilience, you know, absolutely.
That some people can withstand disappointment.
Right.
Others have a much harder time with it. And right, you have to know whether your child can handle it. Some kids can handle disappointment. You know, if you watch little kids play when they're three, preschoolers, for, mm-hmm, example, a child can grab a toy off a kid, and some children just go get another toy.
Right.
Others just completely fall apart.
Right.
Okay. Because, and that's resilience.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And so we have to, for some kids who have that temperament that's a little, mm-hmm, bit more difficult, we have to teach them how to do that. We have, right, to teach them very directly, very concretely, mm-hmm, how you manage those kinds of situations, right, so that they can adapt and adjust as needed.
Because people are going to be grabbing your toys your whole life.
Absolutely.
I mean, in one way or another.
Right. And we do our kids such a disservice when we don't allow them to, right, process that type of disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
When,
mm-hmm,
we don't allow them to, we've talked about it before on both podcasts, I think, that, you know, sometimes kids need to fail so they can experience how to manage failure.
Mm-hmm. It gives us an opportunity as parents.
It gives us the chance to teach them.
To teach them how to handle
Absolutely.
Failure.
Absolutely.
What we love about youth sports. One of the good things about youth sports is you don't win all the time.
Right.
And you learn how to Be gracious in defeat.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going to lose sometimes. So this is how you act when you lose.
Right. Yeah. And so when we have these negative life experiences, when our children experience these negative mm-hmm. life experiences, we need to teach them how to manage them. Right. And one of the best ways that we teach them is by modeling. You know, we show them how to handle right. those kinds of situations.
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, when there's a loss in the family, I think that it's appropriate, for example, to allow your kids to see your emotions at those
right.
times,
right.
but also to verbalize how you're managing it, how you're coping with it, what you're thinking about. You know, when you go to a funeral, for example, since we're talking about these kinds of negative life experiences, such as a passing in the family, your child's going to see you cry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need to tell them what we're crying about, because otherwise kids are sometimes left confused. Okay, why are we crying? We're crying because they're gone, because they're dead. And now that has the potential of forming such a negative impression on them. But if we communicate to them, I'm sad that they're gone because we had all of these really good things that happened in our life together.
Right.
And now, you know, I'm going to have those memories, but, you know, we're not going to be able to, we're going to have to start making new memories without that person or mm-hmm. with just the memory of that person, and express to them how to manage those emotions, because they're going to experience the same emotions. They just may not be old enough or mature enough to be able to make sense of them.
When I was growing up, when I was very, very young, my grandparents lived in what might be described as an Italian village. It was in America. It was in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. But it was modeled after the Italian villages that they lived in, that their parents lived in Italy. Okay?
Right.
It looked the same. It acted the same. Mm-hmm. The same foods, the same gardens and everything. And I noticed that when a person would die, we didn't understand this at the time, but let's say somebody died, women would wear all black
mm-hmm.
for a year, and they would not smile, they wouldn't laugh, they
right.
wouldn't go anywhere. And you sort of learn, oh, so that's what you do when somebody dies.
Right.
Okay, because that's what you saw.
Right.
Okay. And I asked my mother about it one time. She said, no, that's not what we're going to do. We are not going to put on this 1 year
right.
act of going in. A lot of the times the person who died, they didn't like them anyway. You know,
right.
but they went through this ritual, you know,
right.
of thing. And my mother taught us, no, we're not going to do that. That's not how our family is going to do it. And so if you see it being done, you model what you see.
Right.
You know? So I thought, well, when somebody dies, I got to put all black on for a year.
Right.
No, that's what
right.
certain people did. That's not. But my mother taught us, as a parent, taught us something very different, taught us a very different response to death,
right.
to dying.
Yeah. And when you have that different response, when you learn to handle those experiences in a healthier way,
right.
life becomes a very different process.
That's right.
Because when you are then in a situation where you don't make the team that you wanted to make, or mm-hmm. when you don't get into the class that you want to get into, or when you don't perform as well on the test that you were hoping to, or you don't get the job that you were hoping to get, when you then experience those things, you have a very different perspective, because then, right. as Glasser said, we have a choice on how we're going to deal with that, how we're going right. to manage that those experiences. And one of the great ways to experience it is educationally.
Right.
This is a teaching opportunity. Mm-hmm. If I don't make this, if I try out for this team and I don't make it, now I have a choice. I can be really angry about it, and I can say, well, I didn't want to play anyways, which is a lie. We can lie to ourselves and tell
right.
ourselves that to protect our egos, to protect mm-hmm. this image that we have of ourselves. Or we can say, I wasn't good enough this time in these areas, and so here's what I'm going to do to improve that, so the next time mm-hmm. I will be better.
Yeah, you do. And you see that in youth sports,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's Little League or soccer or whatever. Take Little League, most of my experience with Little League, you have these kids who are really good baseball players during Little League. Mm-hmm. And then they either develop more slowly or they don't grow as much, they don't get as big as their peers. So they get to the next level that
right.
where they're on a major league field. You know, you go from 60 feet to 90 feet.
Right.
Right. And it's a huge difference.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some kids, they just simply can't throw the baseball across a field that
right.
big. Okay.
Right.
So then you have a decision to make. You know, do you quit sports altogether? Oh, I'm not good, so I'm gonna
right.
watch TV now for the rest mm-hmm. of my life. Or do you keep working at it
right.
and say, I'm going to work harder mm-hmm. till I do it? Or maybe the best thing to do is to start another sport, you know,
right.
move to another sport. Maybe yours isn't football because you're not going to be big enough. Maybe it's not baseball because you're not big. But you can do golf. You can do tennis. You can move to, maybe you're too small, too thin to play football, but you'd be a great soccer player.
Right.
Okay. So, but you have to make a decision about what to do about it.
Right.
And we have to teach our children to make positive decisions.
Right.
You know, you don't blame the coach. You don't slink into a cave somewhere.
Right.
You keep at it somewhere
right.
doing something.
Right.
A positive response.
Yeah. That's a great example because we talked a little bit about it before on previous podcasts that, you know, you have to balance this persistence. We talked about when
That's
we were talking
right.
about grit,
How
we were talking
you know?
About mm-hmm. persistence versus reading the signs and
right.
saying, okay, you know, this just isn't for me. I didn't succeed here.
Right.
So perhaps this isn't for me.
Right.
Where can I now put that focus and put that energy?
You know, where can I put it? Right.
You can give up.
Yeah.
And giving up is deciding not to do anything.
Right.
Or
right.
you can say, you know, American football isn't for me. I'm going to shift and now give soccer a try or baseball a try or tennis a try.
The other football.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So those are decisions that we make because what happens is that, you know, those who decide to quit,
mm-hmm.
that's where, again, those negative attributions
right.
begin.
Right.
And now it's anytime something doesn't go as planned, the tendency will be to quit.
What do you do with the next disappointment?
Right.
You know, do you keep quitting? You know, with each disappointment,
right.
you quit. No, you don't quit. You move.
Right.
You transfer.
Right.
You move to another positive place.
Right. Mm-hmm. That and I find, and I'm sure that you do as well, I find that this is one of the main messages I work with patients.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have that tendency to see these negative life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And we decide to internalize that
right. mm-hmm.
failure or that absence of success, if we don't want to just use the word failure. We don't quite make it the way that we want to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we then just give up. We universalize it, if that's a word. And we say that, okay, I'm just never going to be good enough. I'm just never going to be able to accomplish these kinds of goals. And we just stop. And instead, we need to look at these as opportunities to grow, opportunities to learn,
mm-hmm.
opportunities to understand ourselves a little bit better
right.
so that we can make more informed decisions in the future and mature and grow as opposed to remaining stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
Too right. often we remain stagnant by just saying that this is it and just stopping.
Right. And you see this with college students all the
yeah,
time. You know,
yeah.
when students change majors,
yeah.
they enter a field, I'm going to be an engineer. And then they take those really tough initial
mm-hmm.
math courses and they go, I can't do this. So I'm going to switch and I'm going to go into this field. And then so they get a few disappointments. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to switch and I'm going to go into this field. Instead of staying persistent, instead
right.
of working through and getting tutors and working with the teachers and achieving the original goal, you know, we've frequently talked about medical school where, oh, well, I'm not smart enough.
Right.
You're smart enough. But you have to keep moving forward, making
right.
positive decisions. And I like that idea where you said, what do? Do you just quit every time you have a disappointment?
Right.
You're going to have disappointments all of your life. You don't quit. You move. You go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and bringing it back to some of the things we were talking about initially is that you have a decision to make whether you want to allow these things to poison you
mm-hmm.
To
mm-hmm.
where you have this negative worldview, this victimized, yeah. again, mm-hmm. perspective, to where you, and I think that this was in our the Ledger article. Man, this has just been a theme for the past couple of weeks. In the Ledger mm-hmm. article that we wrote for this coming week, there was another Yoda quote in it about how, you know, fear leads to hate leads to anger. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when we don't process this information, we get frustrated and we begin to blame other people.
Right.
We could blame ourselves. Or we could blame other people, or we could blame, you know, there are people who blame God when something mm-hmm. bad happens, and it kind of shifts their whole world perspective. And now they're living in a world where they are victimized at the fault of other people, and that external locus of control
yeah.
makes them feel as though they have no power to do anything to elicit change.
And you always do.
You always have a choice.
Yeah.
And so, again, when we think about Darth Vader and we think about some of these characters, these famous villains that we have, time and time again, what we see is that they blamed somebody for this loss. Mm-hmm. And they were out to find retribution or to make others punished. To punish others for what happened, instead of just saying, this is an experience that I had, now how can I use this to to prevent something like this from happening again, or how can I do something to improve myself from this experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have, my daughters have been involved in different athletic activities through high school,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what it is about. Well, we're in Lakeland, Florida,
right?
And Lakeland High School has this wonderful football team that's
right.
been good. And one of the reasons is they have a coach who's been there for 40 years.
Right.
Okay. I think he's won more high school games than any coach in the country.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so we always laugh about it because we say, because what happens in the girls' sports is that the girls frequently, some of these girls will go home. And they'll complain to their parents about, oh, we had to run today, or the girls weren't working hard, so our coach made us run. And then the mothers go to the principal
right.
and complain about the coach,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you made our daughters run, or you made our daughters do this, or you were yelling. We have one of the coaches, they do this pretty competitive cheerleading, and right. it's gymnastics, I mean,
right.
and it's dangerous.
Sure.
And so, and you can get hurt. People can really get hurt
yeah.
in those things. And so this one coach who's very, very good, they bring him in to work with them, and he's tough on those kids. He's
yeah.
really hard on them, and he'll scream at them, and the girls will go home and they'll complain to their parents. Their parents will come in
mm-hmm.
and attack the principal or attack the coach or something. And we always laugh because can you imagine a football player
right.
complaining about Bill Castle's been there 40 years. He's the
yeah.
that any kid would complain about. He made us run,
right.
you know, or he made it
run sprints.
He made us run sprints,
full gear.
Right. That anybody would dare complain about
right.
Bill Castle, and anybody would listen to that
right.
person. And so it reminds me of that story we got on Facebook a couple of weeks ago, where the girl went home and was complaining to her father
right.
that she wasn't getting enough playing time, and she was complaining about the coach, saying, well, the coach is this, and the coach doesn't like me, and I should be playing more often. And he just looked at her and said, "Honey, work harder."
Right.
And he walked out of the room.
Right.
You know. Good advice.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to do it, work hard enough to get there. That's the only option you have. I'm not going to go talk to your coach about increasing your playing time.
Right.
It's between you and your coach. If you want to play, work harder. Practice
right.
harder, work harder.
And that's that internal locus of control. That's saying,
this
is what you have control over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have some, I've worked with players in the past who will come to practice and, you know, they'll work hard at practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those kinds of coaches where I'm not going to practice 5 days a week.
Right.
We're going to practice 1 or 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to tell you what to do at home. And,
right.
you know,
yeah.
you need to take some responsibility and you need
That's
to work
right.
on these things at home. So I'll have players that will come to practices and they look about like they did last week.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have those other players that you can tell, man, this kid's really working.
Right.
And when you talk to the kids who aren't really progressing, they're not getting as much play time and things like that because their skills aren't
mm-hmm.
growing as fast as some of the other players.
Right.
And sure enough, they're not working out. They do great as long as somebody is there mm-hmm. forcing them to do great.
Right.
And that, so that, that internal locus of control, this mm-hmm. is what you have control over.
Right.
You have complete control mm-hmm. over how you process these experiences.
Right.
Again, you, the initial reaction, the initial response is one thing. But when it comes to how you allow it to affect you and the decisions that you make, mm-hmm. That is in your control.
Right.
By and large, that's in your control.
That's right.
You know, we have that whole idea of crimes of passion. Well, that really doesn't exist. You know, there is a thing called not guilty by reason of insanity,
right.
Which is a little bit different. But when it comes to crimes of passion, you're not found innocent because of a crime of passion.
And we tell kids all the time, it's okay to be angry.
Yeah.
It's not okay to hit.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There's a your decision to hit was a decision.
Right.
It was what Glasser would say is, you made a choice to hit. Nobody made you do it.
Right.
And you can't say you couldn't control your, because that's a controlled voluntary response.
Right.
Okay. You have to will your body to do that.
Right.
That's a decision you made. It's a choice you made. Now you have to accept the consequences of that choice.
Right.
Okay. But it's a choice you made.
Right.
It's okay to be angry, not okay to hit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And certainly there are certain things in that we may be experiencing that could influence that, like those with severe impulsivity from ADHD
sure.
and things like that. You know, that's those are situations that are outside of the what we would say the typical.
And that's why we say they're abnormal. This
right.
is an abnormal.
Right.
You know.
That's why it's a diagnosis. That's why
right.
it's considered a disorder.
Get a diagnosis. Right.
But for the majority of us, for 80% or so
right.
of us. The fact is that we have control
right.
over those responses.
And we say to people, well, it's okay to be angry, but you can't hit. But if anger leads to hitting, what Yoda said,
right.
if anger leads to hitting, then we need to get your anger under control.
Exactly.
Okay? So let's go back and work with, okay, so what can we do? Because anger is a feeling,
uh-huh.
but you have control over those things. I mean,
right.
you can exercise control over
right.
those.
And it really all comes down to how you process those experiences that make you have those feelings.
That's right.
You know, mm-hmm. if you process this anger-inducing experience mm-hmm. as an assault on you,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to respond differently than if you process it by saying, man, that guy just does some really stupid things sometimes.
Right.
That,
right.
that makes me mad.
And the other thing is that you say, well, where does this anger occur? Well, when I, you know, and they can name a place, you know,
right.
they can name people. Well, whenever I'm with this person, I get angry.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you're making a decision to be with that
to
person.
Be with that person. So back up one step and say, okay, if this person makes you angry all the time, is it possible for you to avoid that person?
Right.
Yes, it is. Because you're choosing to put yourself into the situation that makes you angry. You're choosing to put yourself in the situation that makes you feel depressed.
Right. Yeah, I was working with this person once who, somebody at his school
mm-hmm.
really upsets him, really makes him mad. And he, you know, the
right.
guy is in one class with him.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, the guy just kind of prods him, and so I said, well, and it's an elective. The class is an elective. I said, well, why don't you change that? Well, let's talk to the school and we'll get you
yeah.
out of that class. Because, you know, if you've talked to the teacher's not doing, can't do anything about it, or says
mm-hmm.
she can't do anything about it. Let's see if we can just get you out of that class.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't want to get out of that class. Well, you have a choice. You know, we can either get you out of that class
right.
so that you can avoid it, or you have to find a different way. Well, I don't want to get out of the class, but I just can't deal with it anymore. I want him to get out of the class.
Mm.
Well, now you're getting into a situation where your mm-hmm. emotions and feelings and problems
right.
is, you know, you're not going to be able to do that, or
that's,
it's
right.
not, that's not certainly not as easy as changing your own schedule.
No, you can't change others.
Right.
You can only change yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so it again comes back to
right.
not only attribution, but that locus of control. What do you have control over? You have control over you.
Right.
Your emotions, your feelings,
mm-hmm.
your behaviors. You can control that.
Right.
And so when, you know, so the title of this podcast, again, was With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
the reason that I think that that is such a fitting title for this is because the great power that comes from some of these experiences should be motivation. Mm-hmm. If you experience something negative, allow that to become a motivation for positive change.
That's right. Because even negative things can be turned into positives.
I firmly believe,
and
I tell this to everybody, I firmly believe that who you are as a person, your character, is defined more by negative life experiences than it is by positive life experiences. You learn more from those bad things that happen in your life than you will from the positive things. Because the positive things are just easy. It just happens. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, hey, you won the championship. What did you learn? Well, if you win a lot of games, you're going to win the championship. Right. Okay. You lost that game. What did you learn? Well, I learned that we got to do better in left field because that's certainly a weakness right now, and we have to have some better pitching.
Right.
So you learn something from that negative experience.
Yeah.
We learn more there. Mm-hmm. And so the great power should be that motivation, and the responsibility is the motivation to do something positive.
Right.
You should turn those negative life experiences into positive motivation to help you progress, to become a better person, to make better decisions, and to make your life better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a choice.
Right, because, and you know, the most, you know, we talk about Elie Wiesel is a Holocaust survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Well known. He gave a talk. He gave the keynote address at an APA meeting one year. There must have been 800 to 1,000 people in this huge auditorium. While he was talking, it was, when you hear the term thunderous silence, I don't think anybody was breathing in the room as he was talking.
Yeah.
And what he talks about in his books and in his lectures is this horrible experience either broke you and you died, or you found a way to continue. Okay.
Right.
Now, yes, if you got pneumonia or some physical, you'd die. But he said mostly it was attitude. He said the people who chose to survive, who found a way, were able to.
Yeah.
And those who gave up died.
Right.
Okay. It's like failure to thrive in little babies.
You know,
there's something called non-organic failure to thrive. And if you don't bond and if you don't get taken care of, you will simply wither and die.
Okay? Yeah.
And what we're trying to do is move people in the opposite direction. That, no, you have to be, as you say, motivated.
Right.
Okay. Whether the experience, whether the life event is positive or negative, you have to somehow use that to remain positive,
right,
to go to the next place,
right,
you know, whether you didn't make the baseball team or you didn't make the cheerleading. Look at all these girls who don't make the cheerleading squad. What are you going to do? Are you then going to give up and never do anything again?
Right.
Or do you work harder or do you move into something else?
Right.
But it should provide motivation for you to do something.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're in a situation where you don't like your job as an adult, if you're in a situation where you don't like your job, what can you learn from what you don't like about your job to either A, make it better, or B, do your own thing? How do you start your own business? Or how do you find a job that fits what you want to be doing?
Right.
This one's a tough one. If you don't like the relationship you're in, you can either figure out how to address it, but through couples therapy or just sitting down with your significant other and talking about it, or you can decide to end the relationship.
That's
it'll be challenging. Sure, it could potentially even be traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a choice you make. You can either choose to suffer, choose to be unhappy, choose to be resentful, or you can choose to make change.
Right.
That's a decision that you make.
Yeah, but you can't keep complaining.
Right.
I mean, that's what's...
Complaining without action...
Without doing anything.
Is fruitless.
Right.
It doesn't
get
you anywhere.
No. No, the operative word here is do.
Right.
Okay, you have to do something. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So, the podcast made sense.
That's a great topic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, because you're right. Relationships are the most difficult.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to decide. And many parents do decide. And they say, no, I don't like my spouse, but I don't want to leave my children.
Right.
Okay, so you make a compromise. And you say, that's your decision.
Right.
Okay.
But don't say angry about it.
That's right. But then you can't be angry about it. Then, right. then you say, okay, I've made this decision. I have to live with it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because frequently people, I mean, I know people who are in relationships for more than 20 years. Mm-hmm. They've done nothing but complain about their partner right. for 20 years. They don't have to be together. There are no children involved or anything. Right. They complain and complain and complain and complain for 15 or 20 years about the same issues, but they never do anything about it.
Right.
They don't change themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't ask their partner to change. They just remain unhappy. Well, that's what William Glasser says leads to depression right. and to other mental disorders,
right.
is
Absolutely.
That you live in these chronic states of discontent, or you've used the word dissonance before.
Right.
You live in these chronic states of dissonance, and that's what creates many of our mental illnesses,
Absolutely.
Is we're simply not doing anything to change it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the choice lies in your lap. You can make the decision to be resentful and angry and mm-hmm. and frustrated and depressed, or you can make the decision to take these experiences and turn them into something life changing in a positive direction,
right.
something that that's going to help you grow, and something that's going to help you become the person that you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, we encourage you to do the latter, because positive growth is that's what we're here for. You know, right. the meaning of life. What is the
that's
meaning
right.
of life? The meaning of life is to be the best you that you can be.
Yeah, because there's a whole world of psychology, a whole field of psychology called self-actualization
right.
theory. It sounds very complicated, but that's what Carl Rogers and the other humanists are talking about, that you need to,
Maslow,
you always need
that.
To become better. You
right.
need to become more. You need to become. You're always becoming. I think being is becoming.
Right.
Somebody wrote a book called Being is Becoming. And I think Sartre, the famous existentialist, said, "We're always in the process of becoming."
Right.
You know? So get to work.
Yeah.
And do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, all right.
Announcements.
A few announcements.
Announcements.
If you have any comments about this whole attribution theory
yeah.
and things that we're talking and choice theory that we're talking about today, write to us. Let us know on Facebook, on Twitter. Anywhere. We're all over the place. A few announcements. Our parenting book, The Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child, is now available on Kindle and on Barnes & Noble Nook.
And Amazon? Yes.
Amazon Kindle. Center. Yeah. So it's a fantastic resource, even though we wrote it.
Yeah, full disclosure.
But it's a...
no, it really is good.
It's $4.99, but it's
right.
you can download it on your Kindle, and it goes through the developmental periods from birth through adolescence, talks about what to expect, and what you can do to minimize those typical behavioral experiences, while at the same time understanding why they happen,
mm-hmm.
so that we don't become so frustrated and mm-hmm. overwhelmed and end up doing things that make them linger longer mm-hmm. than they should.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out. In addition to the book, there's a web address that's in the book that you'll be able to link to that'll actually give you more resources.
Right.
It's
mm-hmm.
like additional
it's really
chapters
good.
And additional
resources. Yeah, you get the
resources.
Book plus you get the resources.
Yeah, so
you know,
so check it out.
It's
really good. That resource supplements are going to continue to increase. We're going to have more and more. I think there's like 13 or 14 that's
right.
posted up there now. We have another 5 or so that we need to post as soon as we finish polishing them a little bit. And we're going to be adding more as the
mm-hmm.
parts 2 and 3 of
right.
the handbook are available. So that's The Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child, Part 1, Behavior Modification. It's available now on Amazon Kindle and on Nook, and I will have links to that in
mm-hmm.
the show notes. Also, we're going to be
resurrecting,
giving some workshops
right.
In the next, well, hopefully within the next month. Mm-hmm. We're gonna try to announce that probably within the next day or two. We're just trying to finalize the date and location, but we're going to, we have a couple of workshops planned, one on ADHD and one on preparing for the summer, things to do
mm-hmm.
for your kid over the summer that's going to help them primed and ready for the school year to start, so we can start off in August on a positive step.
Right. Position your children for a much better school year next year.
Absolutely.
By doing these things this summer.
Yeah. So be on the lookout right. for those things.
That's going to be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. So follow us on Facebook. The Mental Breakdown is the Facebook page. On Twitter, at Dr. Bernie is the handle. Mm-hmm. You can also follow our blog at thementalbreakdown.com. And if you listen to us on iTunes or on Google Play Music, right. please write a review or rate us so that other people can find us. It just kind of increases our visibility so other people can join in. So, any other announcements?
No, I mentioned earlier about... No other announcements. I think we're good. It's Friday.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
Well, I was a little bit worried about one of our football players from Lakeland.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a 4-star recruit with a brilliant career ahead of him.
Yeah.
And injured his shoulder last night. So
goodness.
Wishing him well. Speedy recovery.
Okay.
Nice kid, too. Most of all, this is a very nice kid.
And, yeah.
Good. He deserves to have good things happen. So, AJ, we'll be thinking about you.
All right, AJ. Get better, man. All right, so until next week, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great weekend, a good week, and forget to be afraid.